So it is with great pleasure to have you with us this afternoon, Daniel Simeon, an ex-student, and I was asked to moderate the roundtable this afternoon, our conference speakers on the theme of foreign students from across Canada, Martin Desjardins from the FERC, and Joël Pedneau, an old member of the SSMU, just downstairs or down the street. I've known both of them for quite a while. He is my neighbor, in fact. It is with great pleasure that they are here today. They are talking about foreign students from across Canada. The format this afternoon, we will start with a 5 or 10 minute opening statement, and then we will open up the floor to comments and questions. Who wants to go first? Please keep the microphone close to your mouth, 6 inches. Le commentaire est inaudible pour l'interprète. L'interprète n'entend pas.
I'm sort of bringing up ideas that I feel are often left out of discussions around international and out-of-province students, and the sort of main mode on which I'll be intervening is sort of, well, what if we were to think this, or why is it so hard for one to suggest this as a concrete policy alternative? So I'll get to that. So a sort of major question that I felt I was sort of involved in the strike that went down last year. A major question that I was faced with in a university like McGill, where there are so many international and out-of-province students, was, okay, well, there's this major demand for free education, for tuition freeze, or for fees to be at a certain level in Quebec right now. But it's so hard to get to a point in that discussion where you raise the question, well, what about international students and what about out-of-province students and why couldn't education be free for them too or subsidized at the same level? You know, why are they paying such high fees? And something that I found really interesting was that within even a movement of people who were very much committed to accessible education, it was hard to get to a point where people could sort of agree on, well, fees should be very low or non-existent, even for people who, you know, as the discussion would often go, don't pay taxes here or whichever. So as I reflected more and more on these issues with discussions with fellow activists and other people last year, I realized that this issue strikes at the core of a lot of really fundamental notions like citizenship, the welfare state, and its relation to taxation. And I also came to the conclusion that one can't separate this discussion from a broader one around immigration rights and migrant justice, basically, and access to public services like education or healthcare for people who are not from here. So that's kind of where I wanted to orient this discussion. It's a very broad kind of what if series of thoughts, but I think it's a worthwhile series of thoughts to put forward. And perhaps I can launch into that because I only have about 5 minutes later on in the question periods, but I also wanted to give a sort of more practical overview of basically why there are different fees for international and out-of-province students in Quebec and what the history of that is and what people have sometimes done to counter that. So the furthest back I could find, the furthest example of fees becoming different for international students was 1978. Apparently, before then, in Quebec universities, people paid the same amount, regardless of whether they were Canadian citizens or not. Basically, under the first PQ government, they introduced out-of-province fees, or sorry, different international fees, you know, it was kind of marginal at first, and then it grew to the huge difference that we see today. And so definitely 1978 was also the same year that the Quebec government entered a sort of bilateral agreement with France to offer the same fees, to continue offering the same fees to French students, with the concomitant that, you know, there would be the same thing in France for Quebec students. Further on, just under 20 years later, PQ government also introduces different fees for out-of-province students, so Canadian citizens who are from other provinces studying in Quebec. So it's worth mentioning that before that, there were no different fees for students like myself who are from other provinces than Quebec. So we actually took the government to court over this. It's something that I found during my term there. There's a box full of SMU v. Pauline Marois court documents. SMU lost, but I think it was an argument over sort of federalism and stuff like that. It was back when SMU was run by people who were more or less affiliated with the Liberal Party of Canada, which is no longer really the case. So they kind of took that road, which I found is interesting. 2005, one of the major demands of the student strike back then, which was sort of remembered as around the loans and bursary system, was actually also around the sort of unallowed fee increases for international students that McGill and Concordia had decided upon. So that was a major part of the sort of three or four demands that were being put forward at the time, was to reverse those fee hikes. 2008, the previous government, I think it was Michel Courchain, who was education minister at the time, decided to deregulate some of the fees for certain programs. They're well known at this point, math, computer science, programs that are supposed to, you know, make you more employable or something at a later date. So those are deregulated for international students. And pretty soon the effects of that start to be seen, I'd say, a bit more at Concordia than McGill, it seems like. Things were more dramatic there, or maybe there was less organizing here, or I'm not sure why, but there was a lot of organizing at Concordia University around some very steep fee increases that people kind of learned about after they'd come to the country and suddenly had no funds to be able to pay for the $3,000 or $4,000 more that they had to dish out, and some ended up going back to where they came from, lots of engineering students. So that happened around 2008, 2009. And then most recently, there was a strike over fee increases in Quebec. Some discussions happened around whether a demand for free education should be put forward for all students regardless of origin, and that was a position that was adopted at CLASS, one of the major strike coalitions. And most recently, there's been some kind of scandals raised at Concordia University again around Chinese students and recruitment strategies and all this kind of stuff. So. That's kind of the most recent hot issue. So that would be the history since 1978, as I have researched it, of international and out-of-province fees. So maybe I'll hand it off.
All right. Oh, microphones everywhere. Thank you very much, Joelle. And I'll ask Martine to do a 5-10 topo.
5-10? Okay. Je vais faire mon intervention en français. En fait, la FEUC a quand même plusieurs propositions à mettre de l'avant pour les étudiants internationaux, mais d'abord faire un portrait de qui sont les étudiants internationaux et d'où ils proviennent. Le Québec compte à peu près 22 % des étudiants internationaux à travers le Canada. Donc, on attire quand même une large proportion d'étudiants internationaux au Québec.
International students here in Quebec, despite the fact that we have a majority of universities that are French. So we noticed that 60% of them will go to francophone universities and 40% will go to anglophone universities. And so already the perception that we have of how these students will be distributed might not be the reality, but 2.5% of all the students, 25% of all the students are international students, and the first and graduate studies. There is 7.6% of the students. It's impressive. We always think that it's master's or doctorate students, but there are at master's degrees it's 11.8% and a doctorate, without surprise, 22.9% of the students are international students. So we see already that they have a considerable weight in the student population because they are well represented as well. So It's interesting to see in 2007, 2008, international students paid up to 7 times more in fees than the rest of Quebec students. So already there was a disparity there. That's even before the first hike in student fees, and their fees have been going up steadily since. So for international students, first of all, there's the regular amount for university, and then you have to add administrative fees or service fees that increase by 3-4% every year, and then there is an amount that you have to pay that can go up to about 10% that is decided upon by the Quebec government. This is a forfeitary amount that you have to pay. And for example, this amount goes up. So the international students had a freeze in tuition, and there was increases from 8-9% in the last 10 years on this forfeitary amount or supplementary amount that could represent up to 10% of the tuition fees. On that amount, you have to also add 10% that can be taken by the university directly from the supplementary amount. So you take the supplementary amount, and the university can take up to 10% supplementary on that that is not returned to the government, that stays in their coffers, 10% of the total cost. And also you have to add, as I mentioned, the fees, tuition fees, are unreglemented. So for pure applied sciences, mathematics, computer science, and things like that are deregulated. So there's a large proportion of international students that come to Quebec to study that come from those six programs that are unreglemented, so unregulated or deregulated. So the government wanted to follow up on the deregulation of programs, and we know that it did not happen. So there are still a lot of proposals to cancel this deregulation that was put in place. The faculties that are unregulated leaves the possibility of the universities to increase exponentially tuition fees without having to go through the 10% that I mentioned. So what we propose is to stop the deregulation and to go back to where we were, and freezing of tuition fees for international students, but also a tax credit for international students that choose to live in Quebec. Why? Because we know a lot of international students come to Quebec. Some of them will go back, but some of them decide to stay with us here. So this is an advantage for Quebec to have these international students. I'm just going to think outside the box here and stop talking about money and finance, but these are students that are often bilingual. They have learned to speak in French and in English, and so it is a choice population of immigrants for us in Quebec, and they already are familiar with our culture because they've lived here. For certain people in the doctorate, they've been here 5 years, 7 years. It's a joke, but they've been here at least 3 or 4 years to learn the culture and the campuses and how the work environment works, and so it's interesting for us to have immigrants like that. But unfortunately, we did not introduce different elements to. Also, we can do recruitment on site because we're spending money to do recruitment for immigrants that are skilled and that are educated, and we're looking for people whom we can do transfer of knowledge, and they can come here and share their knowledge, and sometimes we're not able to give them the right certificates and the equivalencies to work here. But we have international students that are here, that have been in our system, that are trained here and educated here. So it's interesting for us to be able to recruit from this group. So why do we not create tax credits so that international students are reimbursed certain things so that they can have a better capacity to stay here in Quebec, and give them something that might be of interest and incite them to stay here and not leave and go to Ontario? Because a lot of them, their first language is English, so they just go to Ontario. So how do we keep them here? That's interesting to look at. It's not just a monetary question. It's also a question of improving our society, in our culture, in our academic knowledge. Yes. We're going to start with a question. If you want to ask questions from the audience on this subject, if not, I have some questions written down here that I can use, but I will let the people from the audience.
Can you start with that? If not, I have plenty of questions for the board. Anyone? Good.
Hi, my name is Ethan. I'm a philosophy student at McGill. This is sort of a question for the speakers and maybe even the moderator. Everyone should really think about this. There was a lot of mobilization last year, and as we can see, the tuition hike as proposed by the Charest government, now kind of enforced by Pauline Marois on out-of-province and international students, are left in a ambiguous, no one's sure yet position, has allowed, certain students in Quebec to be not benefited by the mobilization and sort of not have the struggle completed for them, yet the mobilization seems to have ended. And that's allowed, I guess, administration at McGill to maintain a hard-nosed position and sort of just wait until the results. I was just wondering, you know, even though I guess Smoo disaffiliated from FUC a while ago, I'm an undergraduate, I was just wondering what y'all thought was the next steps in order to make sure that all students benefit from the mobilization, which we all participated in. Thank you.
Actually, we knew of the... Oh my God, I'm so sorry.
It's not
me? Okay, thanks. Well, actually, we knew that those fees were coming up for international students, but right now it's not applicate on your bill as from now. And Miguel, it is? It's still, okay. $254? Great. Well, they were, I'm sorry?
Right in front of me is Stephanie Provosting Life and Learning, Mark J. Adelson, who's been, I guess his name is attached to many of the media resource office documents that have been put out, sort of explaining the situation, or maybe like obfuscating the situation. It's unclear.
It is unclear. Well, actually, how does it work is normally you have the government who asks for the Comité Consultatif d'Accessibilité Financière aux Études to look into tuition fee hikes. It has been asked in September by the new government to look into a new augmentation for international students, but it's not on their tuition fee, it's on their montant forfaitaire. And actually, as I was saying, in the last year, this montant forfaitaire was freeze. But in the 10 years before, it has been going up from 8 to 9%. And so right now, actually, this new montant forfaitaire is going up by 7.6%, which is less than where the last government was going. But of course, it's another limitation. But it's not on your tuition fee. At first, it's on your montant forfaitaire, which is kind of tricky to look and to understand. But the government has been decided yet if they want to go with this new augmentation. They sent a memo inside every university saying this will be coming up, but you're not supposed to have those tuition fee hikes yet. It's supposed to be coming up from the next year. So if you're still paying for this right now, I should be informed that it is, because we've been doing a lot of pressure on the government right now about those fees going up, where we have a summit to talk about contribution from students. And the next summit will be about accessibility. And so, of course, we'll be talking about international students as well. And so if these fees are coming up, I would like to know and to see a bill saying so. If it's possible for you to bring me some. Good.
All right, so
Good. If I can have something like that, I will be pleased to ask again the government where this is going, because they're not supposed to go with the decision because it hasn't been passed through all the system yet.
Response to that question or thoughts about mobilization? And
I mean, it seems like the simple answer would be to just raise as much of a stink at the education summit or summits about this issue as possible, and to kind of get the government to follow through on what seemed to be its commitment for all types of students, which was to not increase tuition fees, at least for the moment, with kind of full monetary compensation to universities, right? Like, it seemed like that was what was going to happen, but then apparently at McGill and maybe other universities for our province and international students, that's not what's happening. So I think it's a situation where it's easy to kind of hold the current government accountable to, you know, what they had said and what people had thought they had said. And,
exactly.
You know, they didn't really specify except for these types of students, right? It was kind of like, well, this is the new policy. So easy situation, relatively speaking, I'd say.
Yeah.
So I would take the moderator's privilege to ask a question, if that's quite all right. In Joelle's opening remarks and further on into Martine's remarks, there are discussions of immigration and of the way in which tuition policy, education policy, and broader visions of public services, or ways in which one can retain highly qualified immigrants, how that can operate. So I thought I would give just an opening for the two of you to discuss sort of the broader kind of philosophical or tax policy, which generally actually is philosophical, issues that sort of, hey, I do 19th century political economy, so tax policy is deeply philosophical for me. So I can go ahead.
Sure. En fait, je vais faire en français si ça ne dérange pas. Je pourrais faire en anglais.
We'll do it in French if you don't mind. It's easier for me, therefore. The reason why we propose a credit for the foreign students, it's if they are qualified, highly qualified, we have a great interest in retaining those people instead of spending public funds to go recruit outside. Our population is decreasing, as we know. We have less and less young people, yet we need them. So we need to compensate this age pyramid. We need qualified people who are trained here. Therefore, it is a wealth for us to have those people. On the other hand, we must also take note of the fact that those students paid fees that are much higher than the Quebec students, and therefore we have to offer those people an advantage. Otherwise, why would they stay here instead of going to Ontario? A student that speaks English as a first language would have an interest going to Ontario because of the language and because the salaries are higher. So what is the advantage for foreign students to remain here in Quebec? Well, there aren't many, and that's why we lose them to the benefit of other provinces. Unfortunately, we've trained them here, and it's regrettable to see them go leave the province instead of keeping them. And it's all a matter of money, really. And for a student who is paid seven times more than a Quebec a student, of course, it is interesting to go work outside since the salaries are higher. In Quebec, as we know, for many families, our salaries are much lower than in the rest of Canada. We're disadvantaged with reference to retention of foreign students because we haven't established the appropriate structures to show those students that they could benefit really from staying here. I was in Chicoutimi lately, and the population, the student international population, has increased by 10% in the three past years. So when you are a foreign student and you are in Chicoutimi, you know, Chicoutimi is, even for a Montrealer, it's, you know, up north. So for foreign students, it is difficult to work outside campuses. So there's also the difficulty in getting to know the codes of the region and work in that region. Learning the culture code is very important. However, it is still impossible for a foreign student in Chicoutimi, as an example. In the region of Chicoutimi, it's increasingly difficult to keep the foreign students. We need to develop not only Montreal, but all of the regions. We need to make it easier. We should also have a fiscal interesting proposals. Those are public policies. We also need a will on behalf of the community, and that's not really obvious because we have groups in Chicoutimi who works with new immigrants, but there is no money for foreign students. So when they accept to accompany and help a student, a foreign student that wants to stay in the region, well, they'll have to do it on a volunteer basis.
I'm glad we're discussing the credit proposal. It's one that I sort of stopped to look at a bit more in depth last year when I was kind of analyzing the different proposals out there. And it seems sort of exemplary to me of that attitude or that presupposition that like the only way in terms of policy to deal with the fact that international students may leave or don't pay taxes, you know, if they don't stay or whatever, is to sort of make them stay somehow. I mean, I find that interesting in the sense that, like, well, you know, people who are on social assistance in Quebec don't really pay taxes, right? Like, they're supported by the state because they can't find a job or whatever, but they still, you know, have the ability to obtain, you know, lower cost education for themselves or for their children, right? So, you know, following that logic that maybe some people, you know, can't necessarily pay taxes because they don't, you know, benefit from having a job or whatever. Well, why not international students? Why not other types of people? So, I mean, there's that broad criticism of the tax credit proposal, but there are also some more specific ones. I don't understand how it would sort of do away with the barriers at the source. It seems to me that it kind of reinforces class inequalities that are already at play. So you need to be able to dish out $15,000 a year or more to be able to study in a Quebec university. But then, hey, if you stay, we'll give you tax credits. You won't have to pay so much, right? It seems like even if you wanted to stay within that paradigm, there would be changes you could think of to this proposal, sort of like, well, sign an agreement before you enter university so that your fees will be much lower, and then you'll have to stay for 5 years or whatever. I mean, obviously, this would still presuppose that people are, you know, worth, people's education is worth subsidizing so far as they will pay taxes, which I think is a deeply screwed up way of approaching the question. So, I think it's also worth taking a step back and looking at the situation more globally in terms of trends in immigration, not just skilled immigration, people who go through university, but I would sort of point out a tendency where in the current situation where international fees are increasing, it seems to me that we're heading towards a situation where skilled workers, people who have a lot of education, are sort of they have to take on more and more debt to be able to stay in the country. Obviously, maybe less if there was a tax credit. But still, they have to take on a lot of debt. It's a big hassle to move to a different country. It's very costly. So those people would be allowed to stay. They would get work visas and things like that, but they would have a lot of debt. And on the other hand, we're going towards more and more precarious temporary labor force for people who are so-called unskilled workers, you know, people who don't have diplomas, who work on farms or, you know, clean your baby's bums or your houses or do all these kinds of affective and housework and all these things that are sort of devalued by society. So I think it would be a terrible thing if we were going to go towards a situation where, on the one hand, universities are kind of being used as levers to make skilled workers, future skilled workers, much more indebted. And on the other hand, as we're talking about these things, people are sort of working here on five-year visas or less on farms and doing all the kinds of work that people think they don't have to do anymore because they're devalued or underpaid or immigrants can do this kind of work. So, I mean, I don't really have a solution to this dynamic, but I think it's worth kind of looking at the question of international students in the context of immigration, in the context of the policies that reinforce global inequalities, which international student fees play into in their own small way.
Okay, thank you very much. A question from the floor, perhaps? All right, Mr. Mooney.
I'll ask the question, what's a just tuition fee for an international student? And specifically, I mean, when I think about the way that the government funds education in Quebec, my understanding is that the government gives the university a teaching grant for each student who's a domestic student, plus on top of that, the universities get to keep just the Quebec part of the tuition. So for a science student, that's going to be something like together $12,000 a year. But in the deregulated programs, universities are now charging $25,000, $30,000 a year. Is that just? Is it just to charge students more than it actually costs to educate them? And how do we try to look at, on the one hand, recognizing that some of these students will leave and will take the skills that they learn here and take them to other countries, and on the other hand, trying to look at, from a social justice perspective, maintaining a diverse student population and charging students what it actually costs. So what is a just tuition rate for international students?
So you're both asked to be arbiters of justice. Who wants to go first?
I can start this time. I mean, I guess the way I would like us to approach the question is, what is a just tuition fee, right, if any? Why ask the question separately for international students? This is kind of the point that I'm trying to drive home, is like, why do these people have to be a separate category of citizens or non-citizens or people who are here temporarily or whatever, right? Like, we're not talking about a large number of people. Some countries have made the choice of granting sort of equal status to international students. In France, if you're a student, you have a student status, right? You benefit from social services, health, and all these things. You have to pay for insurance like everyone else in France. It's a sort of different system. It's not free like here, but when you have a student status, you're kind of on a very equal footing, is my understanding. And, some countries have decided not to charge different fees for international students. Uruguay is one of those countries. I don't see them sort of on the top, of OECD rankings or whatever. And maybe then again, they're only recruiting Spanish students, but that's a lot of potential students, right? But they've made that choice. And so have other countries sort of decided not to charge differential fees. And, that situation is starting to erode. It's a trend across the world. But, until recently, Scandinavian countries, Sweden, didn't have differential fees. Now they're starting to introduce sort of bursaries for people who are from, like, not Western Europe and the EU and North America, but then charging them very high fees for those students, which kind of brings me to a question that I forgot to address around the tax credit issue, which is it seems like what we need to be introducing into this discussion is a nuance around brain drain and whether or not these kinds of policy proposals would actually reinforce those tendencies where, someone might come here from Morocco, do their master's degree and then decide to stay because, better pay or, all the reasons one might want to leave Morocco as a skilled worker, right? People leave countries for a lot of reasons. So the discussion that I want to be having, that I wish we were having a bit more is, if we, buy into this discourse of it's good for Quebec to recruit students through tax credits or lower international fees, well, there's still the problem that those people aren't really going back to countries that are, historically oppressed and have historically faced, the crap end of the stick of a lot of measures, and which we've benefited from as people who, are in Quebec. So, okay, radical discourse aside, like, how do we counter this tendency towards brain drain that we would be reinforcing with these kinds of policies? And a sort of subsidiary question to that is, in that case, do we sort of charge high fees to people from, countries like France or developed countries, but then not high fees to people from, poor countries? What about the class inequalities that exist within those countries? Maybe it's really rich people who are coming from, the small elites of third world countries, but then it's people who maybe have less means who are coming here from so-called developed countries. How do we even tease apart these issues? I'm not sure, but
This nuance isn't really present in the discussion, and I wish it was.
Mm-hmm. Actually, it's true. You need to have a little bit of both, but when you have a tuition fee that is that kind of high, you need to propose something without just saying, well, sometimes, somewhere, we're going to have free education for everyone. You need to propose new proposition and solution and still trying to work on to have an accessibility that will be including all people. And this is why actually we're also advocating in favor of a tuition fee freeze for students, for international students and Canadian students as well. Because you cannot just say, well, until we have free education or tuition fee freeze, we won't do anything because credit taxes will be just emphasizing the fact that there is two classes of people. This is not how it works. But at the same time, of course, there is a risk because we still need social mobility. And we cannot take all people in Quebec and they will have to stay for 5 or 10 years. And actually, that this is true. For example, if you're talking about Haiti, there's a lot of people that came over here to study. And they're not going back home. And this is a major problem. When you need to find engineers, when you need to have doctors, they are not able to have their actually students coming back home to make sure that they can develop their country. And this is a major issue. And of course, this is something that we should look into. Are we proposing a solution that will fit for all? That's for sure none of the answer that I've been proposing. But we need to propose something. And we need to be aware that, of course, there's people and there's country that's sending their students and their elite to our university, and actually they're not going back, and this is a major issue. We need to be aware of that, and we need to find and propose solution to make sure that actually they will go back at some point, and they will give back actually what their country have been proposing for them, or if they receive bursaries, well, we need to find a way that actually they will give back what they had at that point. And so what is the just international fees for students? Well, actually there is no one answer for that. There's a lot of answers that we need to look into. Why actually French student does have the right to pay the same amount as students that are from Quebec? Well, we don't know. We made a choice, actually.
It's deeply political.
Yeah, it is. And actually, we need to address those issues. And I've been talking a lot with International Commission, asking why are we not going forward to actually make those agreement between countries. And some countries actually have lost their agreement with the University in Quebec in the last 10 years. And we need to address those issues as well. So why are we in favor of French students more than we are in favor of other students that came from another country? Well, maybe this is a choice. It's a political choice, I think. And we need to make pressure on our government on those issues, making sure that actually we can have more and more agreement with different students that came from other regions. This is probably one way to go. And at the same time, make other proposition to make sure that students that will came out with a degree in hand will be actually more included in our society. This is two ways to look into. There's not only one solution, and we're not working on the other one. I think we need to propose several propositions, several solutions, and work on all of them at the same time. It's not easy, but we need to be able to do so. Otherwise, well, actually, this is such a complicated issue, we won't be able to go anywhere if we're not having those solutions at the same table.
I sort of had a quick thing that I felt like adding, and that could have been added at any point, but it seems to me that something that's missing from this discussion, especially now that we're accusing government, that there's a willingness to sort of favorize French as the language in Quebec, is the question of, well, you know, it's hard to get into a French language course. I'm not just talking university, but like someone who's a migrant, someone who's, you know, looking to
get a job who doesn't really know French here. There's no sort of mass system where you can get a free French language course that's at your like at your level of need and that will actually get you to somewhere useful. Like you have to pay for it or they're at a weird time, like 8:30 a.m., which you might not be able to do if you're working in the night shift or whatever. So I think something that I think should be added towards added to the discussion is concrete proposals around French language courses that are accessible and that might be run through high schools or cégeps or even universities, and that would allow people to I'm not just talking international students, but people at any level of job skills or experience or whatever to get to a point where they have functional French.
I'll make both, actually, English and French, because you need to have both, and sometimes French students don't speak a word of English. If they do, we don't understand what they are saying. So we need, and actually I have a lot of French friends, and so I know that sometimes it's not easy for them, and so to speak English. So maybe if we are proposing something for French, English will be good as well.
I'm glad the discussion's been a lot about international students because they played a huge role in the strike last year and were a huge inspiration, especially with the connections between Quebec and Chile. I also wanted to bring up out-of-province students because we haven't really talked about that at all, and I'm wondering what do you see in terms of a future mobilization across Canada with regard to eliminating out-of-province tuition across the country? I just thought I'd throw that out there as pie in the sky.
Does anyone else do it?
Mobilization?
No.
I don't think any other provinces have out of province fees. I'm pretty sure anyone know? Yeah.
Yeah, we're very particular. We're exceptional.
Has there been any discussion with students out of province about building some sort of national movement to eliminate these kind of discrepancies between tuition fees, whether it's about out of province, which I understand is only in Quebec, international fees, or even the discrepancy between fees in Canada, right? We saw a lot of information. The government was very proud. We have the lowest fees in all of Canada, even though it's not true for everybody, right? So do you see that discussion happening, right? Like I remember seeing a little bit of a kind of an inkling of a mobilization outside of Quebec at the end of last semester. That seems like forever ago, but that hasn't been talked about at all since.
Well, actually, I've been talking a lot about with other associations, students groups, and I was saying International Commission as well. And so, yes, of course, this is something that we are looking into. I've been to Edmonton actually last week. I've been discussing with students there, and of course, they don't understand exactly why we've been mobilized last year because they don't see any problem with their tuition fee. And so we need actually to address the issue of accessibility first, and this is what I've been talking about with them because actually people don't understand why we've been so angry about this tuition fee hikes of just $1,000. And actually, this is exactly what were the question that I was asked. And so I think we need to actually at first explain why we did that, what was the perspective, and what does it mean, accessibility, because a lot of people seem to think that accessibility is only if you're able to be in your classroom. But actually, accessibility is more than that. It's just not just physical accessibility or geographic accessibility. It's more than that. And people across Canada don't really understand actually what has been going on in Quebec. They know that we've been in the street and we've been on strike, but that's about it. And so we need to do a lot more discussion and debate. But actually we're looking into this and we've been talking a lot with other associations and making sure that actually we can present something that is maybe something as a consensus and we can debate about a way to achieve our goals together. But this is not an easy thing because so the association across Canada want to have a Ministry of Education in the federal government, and we're totally opposed to that because it won't be actually in our favor. And so there's a lot of things that actually another association are proposing that we are totally against. And so this is something that we need to think and rethink.
We've learned, of course, that the rest of Canada doesn't understand Quebec. This isn't new to me.
Yeah, I mean, an obvious thought in relation to this is that education is a provincial decision, right? Tuition fees are a provincial decision. And like with many issues that one could organize potentially on a sort of across Canada level, well, there's the barrier of the fact that, you know, things vary from province to province. And that seems to me to be one of the sort of fundamental political problems of Canada and for, you know, struggles for, you know, social justice and other things, is that when you start to try and target governments, well, you suddenly have, what, like 12, 13, 14, at least, you know, if you're not looking for municipal governments to address, and they're all making kind of their own decisions because that was one of the founding, you know, principles or whatever. Maybe another thought, maybe still in my sort of trend of looking at things very broadly, is that, well, there are sort of two parallel processes of nation building at hand, right? Like, tuition fees are part of that in Quebec. They're part of a sort of idea of nation building around a welfare state, you know, the Quiet Revolution and all that. And I'd say that contemporary Canadian nationalism is in many ways a reaction to that. A sort of way of saying, well, you know, look, we're not so bad at all either, you know, like Canada, we're not just the remnants of the British Empire in this part of the world, you know, we're something better, Trudeau, et cetera. So people are kind of still dealing with that in the rest of Canada. They're kind of still dealing with those ideas around what it means to have a welfare state in Canada, and those ideas are very different from the ones that you might find in Quebec. And I don't know, it just seems to me that there's less of an expectation of, well, here, you know, we have low fees for our people, you know. The type of nation building that people have decided to undertake in the rest of Canada outside Quebec doesn't really include stuff or doesn't politicize stuff like tuition fees as much. So maybe asking people why would be a good step forward, but it seems that there's like a, you know, a very, very deep historical root to the reason that people in Alberta just won't get it, for example. Right?
To take my moderator's prerogative. In fact, my PhD research is into religion and public policy in the 19th century, and I think there's something deep going on there. But
I agree, but this is that.
We can talk later. other questions or comments from the... go ahead. It's Carl, right?
Juste, mais je vais poser en français, c'est un peu plate comme question, là. J'ai pas bien compris, en fait.
It is a bit boring as a question. I didn't understand it. I know that at McGill, the foreign students were not reimbursed. That's what I hear. I have some friends who told me that they weren't reimbursed for their $200 and something. So I'm not sure, but, you know, what was the answer to this? Well, that's because the answer is simply not simple. We have different levels of fees that are charged to students. In September, the government of Quebec advised the committee that they had to raise the lump sums that the students pay up to 10%. Per year in the past 10 years, they have increased from between 8% and 9%, except for last year when they were frozen for foreign students as well as Canadian students outside Quebec. So for those students, the education fees being freezed, there was a lump amount of 7.6% proposed by the government, which is less than the previous year, but is still within, you know, the usual framework. So that's $254, and this $254 is not supposed to be applied on your invoice, because on your bill, because no decision has been made yet. We continue to put pressure on the government. We discuss accessibility of the foreign students, and we're asked why we're discussing this subject. You know, for now, there's no decision that's being made. I'd like to see a bill. I'd like to see what has been charged. Is this educational fee, administrative fee? What is it? So basically, if you know, some costs should be refunded. So this is partly technical, partly political. And since we've heard about this situation, we've met with the Minister Duchesne, we've worked on it, and I can guarantee you that they feel the pressure. And this is probably why nothing is moving since. So that's why I want to see the real figures. I had a question for Martin concerning those fees, the auxiliary fees. I know that there was a limit to the increase of those fees and costs. So what about this policy? Was it renewed? Maybe it could be a good way of talking about real actual figures. Well, it's administrative fees. It's not about the general, this lump sum that is given. So well, last year we also had a problem. We were risking to lose this until we discussed with the CREPUC and the representatives of the government. So yes, it is still on. So we would have lost a lot of money if we had kind of lost this. So when it was created, because the University of Montreal and McGill had increased their fees in a good measure, so we could have lost a lot there. It would have been $2,000-$3,000, or even $4,000 more. So this is not an administration fees, but there's no zero level. So it has to be reviewed. It's very technical, but in my head, it's logical.
C'est il est 2h15. On a commencé tard. Alors, 5 minutes, oui? OK. Est-ce qu'il y a d'autres questions de l'auditoire? Allez-y.
My question is, I'm not sure if it's been talked about, or maybe it's me being naive, about the amount of international students being in graduate studies. But I'm wondering how the stipend is taken into account, because I know that in sciences, when graduate students, there's a stipend given by departments to compensate for the high fees when you come from internationally. And so in a way, does it, like, the university pays more for students because they have to pay more. In the end, like, maybe if there's a lot of students international that come from elsewhere, like, it may be kind of a big amount of money. I'm not sure how this can be taken into account in, like, the solutions, and I don't know if I'm clear enough. But
are you talking about, like, the stipend for PhD students at McGill who basically, like, are able to pay the same amount as Quebec students?
No.
With that stipend, or?
Yeah, it's like taking, like, in our department, say, in order to have equality in the amount of local students and international students are paid for the research, the money that the department pays for the students, and to get international students increases accordingly to the difference in the tuition. And if there's a lot, if I don't know the figures for the number of, like, the proportion of international students are in graduate studies, but then it, like, I don't know if what makes sense in there, like, if the tuition is on high and then the departments have to pay them more, and then after that we give credits, and, like, it gets kind of complicated, and I'm just wondering how it fits into the picture, the amount of students that are paid for from the universities.
It's like using your tuition fee hikes, taking 35%, put it in a financial aid program and pay you back loans and grants. Is it exactly the same thing they are doing with international students?
Mm-hmm.
Which is making you pay more using the money to give you bursaries back,
mm-hmm.
which is actually a nonsense. And this is exactly why I will say last year we weren't happy about the fact that we've been talking about financial aid program more than we've been talking about tuition fee hikes. Because you cannot actually resolve your problems with giving you back your money that you've been putting aside. And so I think the problem should be resolved at the base, which is making you pay less or having a tuition fee freeze, instead of making you pay more and more and putting you in a position when, if you don't receive bursaries or loans, you won't be able to continue actually your degree. And I think this is actually exactly what was the problem last year. We were in favor of accessibility, and it's not about financial aid program, it's about tuition fee, because they're at the base of everything. And if you're not able to resolve this issue, you won't be able to resolve anything, because it's just a way of just passing money through funds and everything. It doesn't help, actually. It's making more and more expenses for administration issue, because they need to take your money and make it in bursaries and then giving you back. And this is probably why we're having so much new expenses for administration, and the fact that every bursaries and submission are using, and we're having 10% taken from those bursaries, making sure that actually you have enough money to administrate your bursaries and your funds. This is completely nonsense, actually.
Well, I mean, it's not every university that can afford to sort of pay the full sort of difference for international students at the PhD level, right? Like a less well-funded university, like especially the UQ system, you know, the regional kind of satellite universities, you know, they wouldn't be able to do that in many cases, except if they had some sort of special funding. So I don't know. That's another thing to keep in mind, is that, you know, that puts a lot of pressure on McGill to go get government funding or like private funding, foundation funding, research grant funding, whatever, right? Because maybe they can get that kind of money, but for some universities, you know, if international fees keep going up, well, it just means that those people are going to have to pay. So it reinforces disparities that already exist, I think.
So thank both the panelists, and thank you, the audience, for this panel on les étudiants étrangers au provenant d'ailleurs au Canada. Je vous remercie toutes, et on va poursuivre avec la prochaine conférence. Merci. J'ai une petite 5 minutes de pause.
A little 5 minute break. Thank you.